99.3 The Vine, and that's Ingrid Michaelson here on the Wine Country Live morning show, where it's time for a little bit of a Wine Wednesday moment. And I'm happy to welcome here in the studio Gustavo Gonzalez from Mira Winery. Am I saying it right, Mira?
You are saying it correct. Thanks for having me.
Welcome in, Gustavo. It says here in my notes that you have worked in every AVA in Napa. Is that true?
That's pretty much it. I was fortunate enough to be a winemaker at Mondavi in my previous life, and was able to see many, many things, including working with all these different wonderful AVAs that we have in the Napa Valley.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about Mira, and you're farming a relatively small vineyard for these wines, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. We have a 16-acre property in the Yountville AVA just south of the town of Yountville on the main street there on Washington Street. And we acquired that property at the end of 2016, and then beginning in the spring started reconstructing basically the acreage there. And we replanted basically 10 acres worth of vines. We have all Bordeaux varietals, a Cabernet Sauvignon, two different Cabernet Franc clones, a Merlot, a Petit Verdot, and Sauvignon Blanc and Sauvignon Gris tying up the white varietals there.
Why do people not make more Cabernet Franc?
Because they haven't discovered the magic of Cabernet Franc, I think is really it. I love Cabernet Franc, and therefore the two different clones. Mm. And therefore, this wine that we're going to taste here in a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing I always say to people is I've never had a wine any better, not necessarily that's the best thing ever, but there's never been a wine to me any better than a really good Cabernet Franc. You know, you can put a $300 bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon in front of me, and it won't be any better than a really good Cab Franc.
I think Cab Franc is a really good blend of what you love about Cabernet Sauvignon and what you love about Pinot Noir. You know, it's not quite as bold and big as Sauvignon can be here in our neck of the woods, mm-hmm. but it's got this perfume and this texture that you find in Pinot mm-hmm. that's just really outstanding.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, we're tasting something this morning that is from your vineyard, and this is a unique to me wine. Tell me about it.
Well, this, just to show my appreciation for Cabernet Franc, we decided last year to make a white wine from the Cabernet Franc vines. They were still kind of young on the property. And so we brought those in at about 22 bricks, and at spot, you know, right there at spur of the moment, decided that we wanted to make a white wine out of it. And so we put it in the press for 5 hours, trying to avoid getting any kind of skin contact or any kind of color into the wine, and tasted and put it in some barrels and put it in some stainless steel barrels. And a year later, we bottled it, and this has been my favorite wine of what we made in 21.
That is, it's crisp, and it's... not effervescent, but it's like right on the edge of that feeling that you get in your mouth of an effervescent wine.
Yeah, I agree. And when you smell it too, there's some pretty hints of Cabernet Franc there. When we have some Cabernet Franc that's still in the tank this year, and we were comparing that to this. And it's hard to describe the aromas because it's a white wine and you don't think about it, but there's definitely some of these typical Cabernet Franc notes on the nose.
Mm-hmm. This would be an amazing wine to take to a blind tasting party. Everybody would blow everybody's minds.
I agree. And then we push that notion on people when they're at the winery. It's like, you know what? Try this. And if you want to blow people's minds, take this with you to your next blind tasting.
You're using an egg-shaped fermenter. And this is something I've read about, heard about, references to it. Why is that important? And what difference does it make in winemaking?
Well, the egg-shaped fermenter that we have happens to be made out of French oak. And just looking at it, it's a beautiful piece of art. Eggs are in golden ratio, and it's something that ties into the story of how Mira started its origins. But the shape of the egg, basically, because there's really no corners on it, and the way that it's naturally shaped, it allows for when the wine is fermenting, it allows for its own mixing, and it kind of creates this vortex that allows you to have kind of this constant mixing inside the tank while it's fermenting. And the result of that is this different texture on the palate. And it's really fascinating. But then at the end of the day, you know, it's a big egg-shaped French oak barrel, and it's just really beautiful to look at.
I bet.
Yeah.
How many gallons?
It's about 550 gallons.
Wow.
So just a little over 9 barrels worth of wine in there.
It's a big boy. Talk about the golden ratio thing. This origin story is pretty interesting.
Well, it's a very difficult thing to describe, but it's kind of all around us in these numbers called Fibonacci numbers. And people maybe you can relate back to the Dan Brown book from a while ago. But basically, there was a mathematician that discovered that there's a sequence of numbers that occurs pretty often in nature. And then some of these numbers are occurring a lot in flowers and stuff like that. So there's a lot of 5-petaled flowers, 8-petaled flowers, and things like that. And so the golden ratio basically is based on the sequence of numbers, which when you start with 1, to get to the next number, you add the previous 2 numbers to get to the next one. So 1, 1 and 1 is 2, 2 and 1 is 3, 5, 8, and so on. And this kind of is the basis for a lot of the artwork and architecture that's out there. And so when I was sitting after a winemaker dinner in Washington, D.C., at a bar in Washington, D.C., along comes my future soon-to-be business partner, and I tried to explain this to him after having a few drinks and whatnot. And so we're still looking for a clever way to describe what exactly the golden ratio is, but it's just, think of it something that occurs a lot naturally, and it's kind of the basis for a lot of the artwork and architecture that's out there that we love.
Mm-hmm. And how does that connect to the winemaking or the vineyard work?
Well, you'd be surprised at how often it just kind of shows up, you know, and this sequence of numbers is the origin of spirals. And when you look at a cluster of grapes, they kind of, if we look at it from the bottom, from that one grape all the way down to that last grape at the other end, it kind of looks like a spiral. I'm not sure that that's based on golden ratio, but somehow how leaves grow on vines and shoots and stuff like that is associated with this kind of stuff. And interestingly enough, when we designed the winery and we designed the tank capacities according to the lots that we work with, without thinking about it, they ended up being 3, 5, and 8-ton tanks, which are Fibonacci numbers. So they're just kind of there, wow, whether you know it or not. Yeah,
I'm tripping, man. We're talking here with Gustavo Gonzalez from Mira Wineries, co-founder and the winemaker there. We're tasting the Franc Blanc 2021, which is a completely new experience for my palate. And looks like it sells for about $65. You only have 250 cases of this, huh?
That's right, and we didn't make any this year, so it's a very limited supply.
Wow. We're going to pause for a moment. We're going to talk more with Gustavo from Mira after a quick break here. Let's check in with Tom Petty for a couple minutes. And we're back on the Wine Country Live Morning Show. I'm Barry Martin, and talking in a Wine Wednesday segment right now with Gustavo Gonzalez from Mira Winery in Yountville, 16-acre estate, and it says here, farmed since 1885. Wow.
We have that history here in the Napa Valley, which is, I always like to point out to people, you know, this is such a magnificent place to grow grapes, and having this history to back it up, I think really demonstrates what this place is and what it's going to be in the future.
Mm-hmm. So it was being farmed before the first go-round of phylloxera, or was that after the first go-round?
I think it was before the first go-round.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, it hasn't been consistently vineyard. There were some other crops on there in between, but it's just great to see that it's got that history behind it.
Mm-hmm. And with all the wines you're making, is everything coming from that vineyard?
I'm lucky enough from my previous days to have established really great relationships with some really wonderful people in the Napa Valley that grow exceptional fruit. So we have had a partnership with the Hyde family in Carneros and made quite a bit of wines from them. The Schweitzer family and Stag's Leap with our top-end Cabernet, among others.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about those other wines. We discussed the Franc Blanc, which is a white wine made from Cabernet Franc. First time I've ever tasted something like that. Tell me about the other wines that are being made.
Well, we have quite a series of wines. We make 14 different wines, and most of them are single vineyard, single varietal. The stuff from the estate is pretty fascinating. We have an estate white wine that's a blend of Sauvignon Blanc and Sauvignon Gris. That's right, Sauvignon Gris, not to be confused with Pinot Gris.
Mm-hmm.
We are also making a white wine, purely Sauvignon Gris, that's aged in this egg vat that we were talking about earlier, and we're making a bunch of red wines, Pinot Noir, Syrahs, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and all with the notion of having them really represent their origin and the people behind those grapes and the winemaking.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a portion of people who might say, why not just make Cabernet? You're in the perfect place to grow it. The market wants it. You can get the premium price for it. Why would you make anything else?
Because Napa Valley is such an exceptional place to grow this palette of grapes that are just out there, and making one single varietal would just be so boring to me. I think having to dabble in these other varietals that maybe are not quite as easy to produce in the Napa Valley is a great challenge for me, because I love what I do, and I love being able to present these other options to people when they come visit from somewhere else, that maybe they just think of Napa's Cabernet and say, we can also make these other varietals really well here.
And, you know, shockingly, people do come to Napa Valley and are not saying that Cabernet is their favorite. There are a lot of people who don't love Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah, that's right. And we're getting a lot of people, believe it or not, asking about Merlot again.
Well, the sideways effect has faded.
That's right.
Talk about your starting point there. I feel like people in the wine business are like artists, musicians. There's something that got them going, a spark, something happened. They met a person, and sometimes maybe they tasted a wine. How did you get into this path?
Well, you know, when I was a little kid, I always thought that I loved airplanes and I loved baseball. And I thought there's no way to put those two together unless I became a really famous baseball player and can afford my own private jet. But, I wanted to study aeronautical engineering, or I wanted to go, you know, see how far baseball would take me. And then at some point during college, something clicked with me through a bottle of wine that I was having that happened to be a Rarotonga Mondavi wine. And there was a famous back label, kind of a, you know, the reason for being story on this back label about how wine has been with us since the beginning of civilization. I don't remember it verbatim, but I was just, wow, this is amazing. This sounds like an industry that I would love to be in. You know, and how do you get into that? You know, I had an ag background because my family's from Sacramento and we did some agriculture there when I was growing up. It was known as Sacra Tomato.
Right.
And canned tomatoes weren't quite as sexy as bottled grapes. And so just starting to look more into wine and seeing what wine was really about and the history and people coming together on top of that, I just thought this is an incredible industry and also a place where you can show, you know, as we always say, your scientific background, but also your creative spirit.
Yeah. So when you're not drinking wines from Napa, what do you recommend? What do you like? Tell us a little bit about others.
I love wine in general. So if I go to a restaurant, I'm always looking at the list to find something that maybe I'm not as familiar with. And currently a region that I'm really into is the Loire Valley in France, because it's a pretty big area. And back to my love of Cabernet Franc, you know, I'm trying to learn more about the Cabernet Francs that are being produced in that area.
Fantastic. So where are these wines available? Do you have any visitation at your location? Those kind of questions.
Well, we invite people to come visit us at the winery. It's a beautiful estate, really charming and great atmosphere. It's in the heart, it's just south of the town of Yountville. And you can visit us there. You can check out our website, miranapa.com, to set up reservations and call our concierge to come pay us a visit and even order wine from there.
Fantastic. Lots of different possibilities wine-wise at Mira. And we've been talking with Gustavo Gonzalez, who's co-founder and the winemaker. Who's your other co-founder?
His name is Bear.
All right.
Bear Dyke.
Okay. Very good. And thanks for coming in today. Delicious wine. Really enjoyed meeting you and tasting something different. And best success.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right.